Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
William D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick with Adam Vingan. Derek Mason will join us in the next segment, taking care of some very important Derek Mason things. But for now, it's me and Willie and Nick Frazier. How is everybody doing on this fine Wednesday?
I am doing well, reflecting a little bit, as we all do, on this day, on September 11th.
Of course.
Still, you know, something that we'll always reflect on when the calendar hits this date. For me, it's something, and one of my good teammates, good friends from Vanderbilt Baseball, Jeff Martin, we have a big text chain of the... We call ourselves the original Vandy Boys, the pre-Tim Corbin era, right? There's a bunch of us that have joined this thing over the last few years. But a teammate of ours, Mark Hindy, who was such a wonderful personality, left-handed reliever, a walk-on who had just maybe the best work ethic on the team, best attitude on the team, worked his way up the chain to get pitching innings, was not a you know, just attended Vanderbilt as a student, really, walked on and won a job. He was one of the people in the Cantor Fitzgerald building working there in the World Trade Center when the plane hit. And so we just lived it that day, you know, wondering, like everybody else, was he up there? And, you know, they had to deduce that he was eventually after the days and days of searching, just, you know, so many stories from that. We all have our different memories of that day, whether you just sat there like I did and watched it unfold, and then you try to check on everybody who lives up there. My brother was living in New York at the time, so checking on him and finding him took some time. But, you know, so much went on that day. So I'm glad that every September 11th we do take a minute to reflect and remember that day for many, many reasons.
Yes, absolutely. Hard to believe it has been 23 years since that somber day, and we will always remember the impact it had on our nation. But this came across my timeline earlier, Willie, and of all people, I think you will appreciate this. When I think about sports and September 11th, the first thing that came to mind was Mike Piazza's home run for the Mets in the first baseball game on New York soil after the attacks on September 11th.
That is, they actually made a very good 30 for 30 out of that. And they have Mark DeRosa. They have a number of players who grew up in that area that played on the teams. I think John Franco's in there. But, yeah, memorable night when they finally did resume playing baseball. And that fall of 2001 was an extremely memorable, you know, march to the playoffs and then great postseason. This was the year after the Subway Series in New York where the Yankees and Mets, and sadly, my Mets lost to the Yankees. And I had to wear Paul Kuharski's Greg Nettles Yankees shirt to the Frank Wycheck show. That hurt. I gotta say, that hurt.
Just for one day?
Just for one day, thankfully. But it was a show that was out in public. That just, it stings to this day. But in 2001, the uplifting home run of Mike Piazza is just what you some of the things you love about baseball. It's a great 30 for 30 if you ever get a chance to see it. It's probably going to be rotating, I would think, today on one of the ESPN channels, or if you have the ESPN Plus and you want to sort of get the vibe, remember, reflect, all of that stuff. It's got all of that. It's great.
We will talk about the Titans week 2 matchup against the New York Jets throughout the show. Jonathan Hutton will join us at noon. Mitch Light will join us at 1 to talk college football. But Willie, you sent this my direction this morning. The NFL has set its week 1 ratings record, averaging 21 million viewers per game. The most watched week 1 on record, ESPN and the Associated Press write, the league and Nielsen said Wednesday morning that the per-game average on TV and digital platforms was a 12% increase over last year. Nielsen began electronic measurement of viewing in 1988. What's most impressive about that number is the fact that you need every streaming service under the sun in order to watch NFL football. You need Peacock, you need YouTube TV, you might need God knows what else to be able to watch the NFL.
Amazon.
Yeah, you need every streaming service known to man in order to watch football. And apparently, it didn't make a lick of difference, at least according to this. All told, 123 million people saw at least part of one game, its highest total for an opening week since 2019. So
123 million people saw at least part of one game. Now, just stop for a second there. And I think that's the trick of the NFL, is that they have enough of the games available to the home market and to somebody's market that you will get at least one game, and I guess at least, what, three games free, even if you don't even have cable. If you have the simplest, you just got the old rabbit ears. So that's how you get that number up there, and it's astonishing to me that it still goes up. It's like I kept thinking at some point over these last few years it's going to saturate, and it'll, you know, maybe it just won't be trend. It'll trend down a little bit. Everything goes in cycles, it seems like, but they don't ever seem to cycle down.
I'm curious about that number, because with the new YouTube TV, they have the quad screen. Is that because you know what I'm talking?
Is it times four? Do you get a four times?
I guess.
I don't know.
That's what I'm guessing.
The multi-view, I believe, is what it is called.
Yeah, and they have like four different games going on at the same time. So I wonder if those ratings are based off of, you know, each game individually on one screen, or, you know, something like, you know.
That is a technicality. I do wonder how they calculate it.
I would like to know what at
theory,
least
if
one...
you watched 30 minutes on the, what did you call it, the multi-view?
Yes.
So if the three of us watched Nick's multi-view for 30 minutes, we watch parts of four games.
See?
But we only watch for 30 minutes. And then you've got the one guy who does the traditional model of when noon starts, you're watching the first game, and then you maybe go rake leaves for a couple minutes, come back, and you watch the second game, and then you eat dinner, chill a little bit, and then you flip on the Sunday night. And like, there's that guy who's watching literally 9 hours of football or close to it. But he's only watched three games.
I want to know what part of one game is.
I want
to know what part of one game is.
That's a good
question. 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
I'm sure there's something that qualifies that. I'm sure it's not just flipping across.
I have to say, I can't watch the multi-view. I don't have the attention span to watch four games at once on one television. If I'm at a sports bar and there's one TV with one game next to another TV with another game, I feel like I can manage that. But one box with four different games, I can't do it. I don't have the attention to do it all.
I can't either. I like one game I'm watching and one game I'll flip to. And of course, now the red zone, any commercial break, you go to the red zone and you soak that up. And so it's just, it's endless. But I cannot watch. I can't do the quad box. I don't.
Really?
You guys started to get me on that in the Olympics. I just can't. I can't do it.
That was pretty cool during the Olympics. That was pretty cool. I mean, for the quad box, for me, it's
how
like,
do you focus on four games? You can't do it.
Here's the thing, Willie. As a fantasy owner, I have certain players on certain teams. So this
for
is how
sure.
This is how I dedicate my quad box. Three of the games are actual games to watch. The fourth one is red zone, and then the regular TV is the Titans game.
So you're going five, really. It's really a five.
Yes. It's regularly a five, yes.
I see plenty of pictures of people on social media. It's like, all right, I'm ready for the game. And it's the big screen, then the iPad, then the phone. I can't do that. I am a single screen experience kind of guy. I want to watch what's on my television, or if I'm not by a television, if I'm watching on my computer, I can't focus on multiple things at once. When it comes to watching television, I can't. So kudos to those of you who can. But when I see that set up, I mean, I'm sure I saw it on the morning of week one. It's like, here's my TV. Here are my two iPads. Here's my extra little TV that I dug out of the basement that still has the rabbit ears. I can't do it.
It really is a ritual, though. It's amazing how it just continues to grow.
Nick, you sent something our way that I thought was quite interesting. So Deshaun Watson is in the news for multiple reasons. One, he had a terrible game for the Cleveland Browns against the Dallas Cowboys. He's also facing a new civil lawsuit after being accused of sexual assault and battery while on a date 4 years ago. But apparently people have sussed out that he has a burner account now on Twitter.
That is correct.
Now, this has not
allegedly
been, this has not been confirmed,
no,
or verified, right? But this is, and you sent this thing, and I have to laugh because I don't know who it is that is on this conspiracy theory, but the guy's name, whoever the title, is Larry Bickerstaff. So I don't know where that comes from. But
Leroy.
I'm sorry, Bickerstaff. Leroy Bickerstaff. And Leroy has got the classic burner thing where it's not there's not a picture of Leroy.
Any relation to J.B. Bickerstaff by chance, the basketball coach?
Or his, what is it? His, like, there's generations of Bickerstaff. So there was the Bernie Bickerstaff,
mm-hmm,
was a coach for a long time. I think Blair. I think his son is the guy you're talking about. And then there was one of Vanderbilt's new coach had a Bickerstaff playing for James Madison last year. Pretty good play. So it's a big basketball family.
A proud lineage of Bickerstaffs.
I don't know that Leroy is one of those Bickerstaffs. There's no evidence to say yes or no. But what it is this guy strings together these people that are, you know, as you would expect, all over Deshaun Watson as he's fumbling around and not playing well on Sunday. And then Leroy is always right there, right behind all of the trolls with a very encouraging, hey, Deshaun's not that bad. Hey, you know, if you block for him, he'll make the play. It's just one after another after another. And so people suspect that there could be some tomfoolery here, some shenanigans.
My first thought went to Kevin Durant, because Kevin Durant was infamously outed as using a burner account to defend himself several years ago because he sent out a couple of tweets from his verified account in which he referred to himself in the third person. Like, he saw someone, like I was going to say slander, but slander is said, not written. Liable him, I suppose. Denigrate him on social media, and forgot to switch out of his verified account and replied back to that person, hey, Kevin Durant's not so bad. What are you talking about? From his @KDTrey5 or whatever.
And
it
he
is,
admitted. Twitter.
And he ultimately admitted it, I think. There was no avoiding that at that point. He had been outed. But burner accounts are interesting. One of the Colangelos.
Yeah, speaking of basketball families, Brian Colangelo, who, not Jerry Colangelo, but I think there is a relation there. He was a general manager of the 76ers, and he got busted. And I think it was his wife was in cahoots with him with a burner account that was supporting all of the trades and the maneuvers that the 76ers were making. I can't remember if this was in the middle of their super tank years. Remember when they tanked to get guys like Joel Embiid and I guess Ben
Trust
Simmons.
Trust the process, Willie. Trust the process.
They went through some very lean times. And then obviously they've had some very good teams once that took form, but it took a long time. But he was outed, and he got fired because he was giving out like inside information to defend himself as the burner. And that, you know, that's taken it to a whole new level there. But you got to believe that through the years, there have been various burners by whether it's the actual person or just a close confidant, a family member, a close friend, the defending burner. And I do wonder if is that a good thing or a bad? Like, do you think if it's done right and you are beneath the surface, it can be effective to fend off trolls? I've often wondered that.
No, because you don't feed the trolls. That's the whole point.
Okay.
Is you ignore them as best you can. The mute button on Twitter is a wonderful thing.
Okay.
Because if you block somebody, it gives that person the satisfaction that you block them. That is a badge of honor.
Okay.
If you,
with you on that.
But the mute, you don't have to see that person, and they don't know that you can't see it. That's how you do it.
But I have often wondered, though, a sensible, smart person and a clandestine person, right? Because you have to do this, like Kevin Durant. He busted himself because he just slipped up and didn't, what did he say, didn't get out of his burner account, and he kept his real account, and he outed himself.
Right. He replied to people in the third person on his okay. official account, his verified account. So he must have forgotten to switch over from his real account to okay. whatever his burner account name was, Chunky Lover 53. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so I still think, though, if I do wonder if it's a smart tweeter and you do it right and you're not just busting on people, right? You're just trying to point out things. Can it sway the mob away from and be a and get the intended goal, which is to get the trolls to chill? Or is there just absolutely no controlling the trolls?
There's no controlling the trolls. There's no controlling the trolls. There's okay. absolutely right, no controlling.
I have wondered. I think probably it's a natural thought of anybody. It's like, okay, what if I create a secret identity and I'll be the guy that counterattacks all of these things? But
Willie, the trolls are like hyenas. You give them any bit of grace, they're just going to just
if anybody has
munch.
Actual ways to combat trolls on social media, that person, you know, deserves everything because
okay.
I don't engage. I think that's the easiest thing to do. Not that people are regularly trolling me, but I choose not to engage. But if you're Will Levis, for example, Will Levis has been taking it on the chin.
I'm guessing he got trolled.
So. Oh, he's been trolled.
Yeah.
I mean, we know it. We haven't really been doing the trolling, but we have been talking negatively about his performance.
Yeah,
but there has been plenty of trolling of Will Levis over the past few days, and we'll get to someone.
Now, okay, and so what do you consider? This is another thing. What do you consider across the line trolling as opposed to? Because on our show, are we being critical? Yes, because and for obvious reasons,
I'd like to think it's constructive.
Constructive.
It's constructive
is the word. But you know, there are trolls on Twitter that are just relentless and senseless, and of course they're anonymous, so they just fire away and say whatever. So is there a Will Levis burner out there that is Will, not Will himself, but maybe is there somebody fighting for Will in the Leroy Bickerstaff kind of role? And what would you name this guy?
I would probably name that person like Duke's Mayo Rules, because you can't say Hellman's. Because it would give away that it's Will Levis. No free shouts, I know, but Duke's Mayo was the only thing I could think of at the time. Hellman's would be too
on
obvious.
The
nose.
Yes. I don't know. If you have a solid first name, like a Kyle or a Johnny Hellman. Johnny Hellman, I think, would pass.
I guess it's
the Hellman's can't be in there, though, because it's clearly a Levis. It's connected to Levis.
Well, that's the thing. If you take off the S and just put Hellman, then you have Johnny Hellman. Nobody will know who it is. Post a different picture of somebody you don't know who it is. It's Johnny Hellman.
Billy Jean's is one I thought of a lot, but that's a little bit of a giveaway. But are you, like, you almost, if you're too obvious about it, people are like, well, that's surely not him. But I wonder, you know, what would be your strategy if you were going to create a burner account for Will Levis? I'd love to hear from some people that see this phenomenon and wonder about it. And does anybody know Leroy Bickerstaff? I would like to know. Is anybody from Cleveland? Do they know Leroy? Is he a person, or do we think this is actually a Deshaun Watson burner?
We're putting out an APB for Leroy Bickerstaff. If you know where Leroy Bickerstaff is, please let us know. But, I mean, Deshaun Watson may be the only quarterback in the NFL who's been getting it worse than Will Levis on specifically on the field. You cannot ignore the off the field allegations when it comes to Deshaun Watson, considering his history and what he's been alleged of doing and all of the settlements that he came to with the women that claimed that he assaulted them.
Yeah.
There is a new one. But strictly on the field in this particular case, Deshaun Watson had a just as bad of a game, I feel like, as Will Levis. Now, I don't think he made the mistake that Will Levis made in throwing the pick six that cost the Titans the game. But the Browns fans did boo him off the field, the whole team. But Deshaun Watson, considering the contract, and as Derek pointed out the other day, the good news for Deshaun Watson is that he doesn't have the most guaranteed money anymore now that Dak Prescott has, I believe, more guaranteed money than Deshaun Watson. But that contract has to be one of the worst contracts ever given to a major North American professional athlete.
And it continues to get worse because this is the beginning of 3 more years. So they have this year and then 2 more years after this year of that money, which is all guaranteed. So there's no getting out of it. And I do wonder how bad would he have to play for them to go to guess who? A guy we've talked about a lot on the show the last couple of days, Jameis Winston, who is waiting in the wings, hoping for another shot. That is going to be an interesting plot from a lot of different angles.
I saw a graphic the other day from the 33rd team. We referenced the 33rd team yesterday in talking about Jameis Winston, and it was just a graphic of the Browns-Texans trade revisited and all of the draft picks that the Texans received trading Deshaun Watson to the Browns. And the players that the Texans were able to acquire either by drafting them with those picks or trading those picks to get certain players. From that trade, the Texans, among other players, have received Will Anderson, Tank Dell, and Stephon Diggs. Either by drafting players with those picks or using those picks in other trades.
Yeah.
Will Anderson, Tank Dell, and Stephon Diggs, among others. But those are the three headliners. That the Texans' rebirth has a lot to do with that trade.
There's no doubt about it. And the early returns on the new moves that they made are off the charts good. Every podcast I like to listen to with people that like to do insights around the league, man, everybody's glowing about really the Colts and the Texans, because either team could have won that game. But the Texans and the way Mixon played, Diggs looked good. They look like they've only added to what they did last year, which is scary for the Titans.
Stephanie on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, how does anyone have the kind of time to troll? I can barely keep up with one Twitter account, and I don't have the attention span I think would be necessary to perform at high troll standards. I would love to know what high troll standards
are. I think it is a job. I think it is a job to be a troll. You've got to have a lot of dedication to do it right. And that's why I'm asking the question, can the trolls be countered? Because of their dedication, the dedicated trolls, can you counter them? Can you get to them? Can you sway their thinking? Or is it impossible in this day and age? I just would love to hear somebody try to answer that question.
Just when you think you squash one troll, 5 generate in their place.
It is like that nightmare movie that's what happens, right? They multiply.
Right. It's also like Gremlins, you know, don't feed the trolls after midnight. There's probably a lot of...
I did see that movie.
There's probably a lot of...
In the theater,
yes,
scary.
There's probably a lot of that. It is almost Halloween after all. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, we mentioned Will Levis, whether or not he has a burner account. But Will Levis and his decision to throw the ball that ultimately led to the Titans' demise, he's getting it from everywhere, including a legendary figure. We'll get to that next. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie and D. Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick with Adam Vingan here with you on Wednesday. Matthew in Nashville asks, where does the Deshaun Watson trade rank for you with the Herschel Walker, Russell Wilson, Carson Wentz to Indy, Jerome Bettis to Pittsburgh trades. I guess he's asking, where does the Deshaun Watson trade rank in terms of all-time bad trades in the NFL?
Disastrous trades. Yeah, it's moving up the charts, especially because I think everybody keeps waiting to see if the light will go back on and the health can come back on. But there's less and less hope. And then on top of it, as you referenced, and we had a texter asking about it, I read about it, this latest allegation on top. Now, you would think, after all that he went through and had pretty severe penalties, pretty severe legal fees, I would think, that the last thing that you would do is what he is alleged to have done, which is basically do the same predatory stuff, except this time just to a regular date and not a licensed massage therapist, if I'm going to put it in a nutshell. But it'll just have you shaking your head. I don't know if the allegation is true or not, but on top of everything that he's trying to do to rebuild his career, he's not doing a very good job of taking care of things off the field.
Let's see what happens with the Texans. As I mentioned, among the players that the Texans acquired in that trade in terms of the draft picks or using those draft picks to make other trades, Will Anderson, Tank Dell, and Stephon Diggs. Let's see what happens with the Texans. If the Texans continue to take off and they win somewhat soon, I mean, that Deshaun Watson trade could get even higher on that
Cowboys,
list of worst trades.
The Cowboys winning the two Super Bowls and going to a third, you know, that's still bearing the fruits of that of the Walker trade. It was a big part of that, right? Their early 90s run. So the Texans have to cash this in with playoff success, I think, to get it up there. But it's looking like it's going to be a contender for rivaling the Herschel Walker trade, which everybody references. It has its own name. That's how bad the Herschel Walker trade turned out to be, is because it's the first trade that pops in your mind. It's like Bobby Bonilla. When somebody gets a lot of deferred money, it's the Bobby Bonilla thing. You know that you're in your own category when you have the name associated with something like that.
Around here, it's the Martin Erat trade, right? You remember?
I guess you could say that.
You remember that, or, to an extent.
Right, or a Predator fan would certainly know what you're talking about if you said he Jimmy VC'd them. Like if a guy goes through his college eligibility and elects not to sign with his team that drafted him, you could say, hey, so-and-so got Jimmy VC'd, right?
Yes,
I suppose you could.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens with the Deshaun Watson fallout, but it's not looking good for Deshaun Watson in the Cleveland Browns. It did not look good for Will Levis and the Tennessee Titans on Sunday, as we all know, losing 24-17 to the Chicago Bears. Will Levis with what he called a boneheaded play. That's putting it mildly. I'm sure other people have used much more colorful language to describe it over the past few days. But Will Levis with the boneheaded interception that led to the loss. And I believe it was yesterday on the Pat McAfee show, even Bill Belichick was getting his licks in on Will Levis.
You can make a play, but don't make a play, make a bad play. So, you know, that's the one that always got me when the player said, well, I was trying to make a play. I was like, well, how about try to make a good one then? Like a bad play.
Yeah.
So like the play that Levis had where he gets out of the pocket, he flips the ball, you know, underhand, backhand, whatever it was. And that's just, you know, even if you hit it, what do you really have? Not much. And then if you don't hit it, then, you know, you lose the game. So it's just, there's no upside to that play. There's only downside. And, you know, it's just, you know, that's just a terrible decision. And Tom and I have talked a million times about, you know, if you complete this pass, what's the upside? You gain 1 yard, you gain 2 yards. All right, you guys going to get tackled anyway. Like the play we just saw in Tennessee. I mean, what if he had completed that? What's the upside? 2 yards? What's the downside? Lose the game. You know, like that's you just can't make those kind of decisions. And even if that ball had been complete, there's no upside to it. And so, you know, Tom did a great job of, you know, risk management and, you know, cut his losses. And so, you know, rather than turn the ball over, all right, you lose a couple of yards and you get sacked, but at least we can gain our field position back by punting on third down.
That was Bill Belichick on the Pat McAfee show. And I just want to say, for someone who was so media averse throughout his legendary coaching career. Bill Belichick has an awful lot of media jobs right now. The guy is everywhere. He's on Pat McAfee. He's on the Manning cast. He's on Inside the NFL or whatever that I think it's called Inside the NFL. He's all over the place. For a guy who was a big old grump to reporters for two decades, he's awfully media savvy all of a sudden.
It is quite the turnaround. I will say that I have seen him on specials with the NFL Network and things. He does have, I've always known that he's got this in him, this ability to analyze and articulate if he wants to. It just shows you that he intentionally made no effort for all those years. He just intentionally was a jerk, you know, or just, I'm saying nothing. I don't care what anybody thinks because he's always had this ability to articulate. Now that analysis there, Adam, that's really kind of a Captain Obvious, right? We all could have sort of made that same assessment of that play, and we did. I will say I disagree with him on one thing. I don't think Levis was even trying to complete the pass. I think he was simply – he thought wrong, but I think he believed he could shovel the ball out of bounds, right, and avoid the sack instinctively. And it was bad. And he had some funny one-liners. Like, what's the upside? What's the downside? Obviously, it was a bonehead play. I don't think he was trying to complete the pass. I see what he's saying, though. And what's the best case? You complete the pass, and you're still way short of the first down. We punt. I think he thought maybe the yardage was worth trying to throw it out of bounds, but it was terrible. Like, he had two or three chances before he actually tried the last-minute shovel to get rid of the ball, or just to tuck it and take the sack. So it was an absolute worst-case scenario. But I'm glad to see Bill's on the scene and actually watched a little bit of the Titans game.
Well, I think with Bill Belichick, as it relates to his many media responsibilities, I think he's just trying to show a softer side of himself so that when the next coaching cycle comes up, people aren't as worried that the gruff Bill Belichick is going to come in and take over the organization, which... maybe it'll work, but I have a feeling that once Bill Belichick becomes a head coach again, we're going to see the Bill Belichick.
He's going to revert?
Yes.
I that's interesting, because Bill Parcells did that, right? He retired. He did some TV, and then he came back. I don't know that he was – and he was more – he wasn't like Belichick. He was more, I'm taking the press conference to you. It was a little bit more like Mike Vrabel, but I think Parcells with the New York media had a unique ability – to sort of have the media on eggshells a bit. Like, be careful how you ask this question, because if it comes out wrong and I don't like it, I'm coming right back at you. And so he had that, and he knew it. That was his tactic. And Belichick, of course, watched Parcells week in and week out for those 80s Giants teams. So I don't think Parcells changed his tune. He didn't have to, really. I thought he was pretty good as a studio analyst there. One guy that came to mind, though, as you were saying this, from the hockey side, Rick Tocchet, right, also has that kind of nasty player, competitive player, hard-nosed, but very articulate, hard-nosed coached. I thought he did a very good job, surprisingly well, on the TNT panel. And I do think he had a little different tact with the media when he came back to coach the Canucks. I noticed it in the playoff series last year. I think he has a little bit more feel for what the media has to do, and I appreciate that. Right, because that Vancouver media, in its own way, is a little bit like a New York media for football. Everybody in the town is all over that team. Everybody's going to ask questions from all angles. There's a lot of people, and you have to be ready every time you take the podium, even if it's just a regular Tuesday night game in January where both teams are, you know, just kind of rolling along in the dog days. It's still the biggest thing going, and every press conference means something.
I'll tell you one coach it didn't work for in the hockey world, John Tortorella. Remember when Tortorella did some work, I think, with TSN? Was he on ESPN?
He was on
recently.
ESPN.
I was thinking of even further back, like before maybe he even coached the Rangers. He was on like after he was done with the Lightning. I have this right? I think it was Lightning, then the Rangers. But he was on TSN a while ago. But he was on, you're right, I actually had forgotten about that. He was on ESPN somewhat recently before being hired by the Philadelphia Flyers. And I like John Tortorella as an analyst, but
it didn't
change his perspective of of the media.
Nope. He went back to the Flyers and had a lot of less than 60-second statements and things like that.
Yes, famous for. Absolutely. But you know what? That wasn't the only stray that Will Levis caught on the Pat McAfee show this week. I think this was from Monday. Pat McAfee, we listened yesterday, the guys on the 33rd Team podcast, Steve Palazzolo and Sam Monson, compare Will Levis to Jameis Winston. Listen who Pat McAfee compares Will Levis to from earlier this week.
There was a point where it was either 17-10, maybe 17-16, and he was going up and down the sideline screaming his head off, so maybe has to figure that out a little bit. But to your point, they kind of went and got the best offensive weapon available in Ridley and the best defensive weapon available in Snead, and then they got the best center, you could argue, in free agency, too, in Cushenberry. So if they're all in on Levis, he better not throw backhanded pick sixes to lose games.
Yeah, and that was it was an impressive backhanded pick six.
Oh, he can make that pitch, Coach.
You know what it looked like?
Who's that?
Two sprains. All I can think of is this guy's too tough. This guy wants to make too many plays. He's got that Carson Wentzism in him.
Sure.
You know, because Carson would never go down. No play was over. I can do whatever. And he was incredibly talented and was able to do all those things. And when he's playing great football, he was through the roof. But then whenever he was making some of those decisions, it was like, this is professional football. You can't be doing that. Whenever I saw that backhanded toss, I'm like,
wow.
Oh, no. You better not have that same ism that Carson had, because that'll lead you into some bad spots. Now, with that being said, if his upside is anywhere near what Carson Wentz's upside is, I think everybody in Tennessee is pumped about that. Just got to manage the game a little bit.
Yeah, I still believe in him.
They still believe. They believe. They're not writing them off.
Did I hear Pat McAfee refer to Carson Wentz as two sprains?
I wasn't sure who he was talking about for a second there. Then I was like, oh, yeah, Carson Wentz.
Well, here's why. Because Carson Wentz, when he played for the Colts, remember, he played a game against the Titans with two sprained ankles. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
So that must be what he's referring to. So,
and the Titans won that game. That was early in the season.
It was a week three game.
Yeah, in the Carson Wentz that ended up did not end up well at all.
It was bad.
Yeah, that was not good.
But so, they still believe Willie.
They still believe in Levis. In recent days, we've heard Will Levis compared to Carson Wentz with the Colts specifically, Jameis Winston, and I actually like what Derek said yesterday when we were bringing up Jameis Winston, that Jameis Winston at least gets you the touchdowns. Now, there's a lot you have to manage with Jameis Winston, but he'll get you the touchdowns. But overall, though, that is not the company I would want to keep as a quarterback in terms of, you know, who am I being compared to right now? Late era Carson Wentz. I know Carson Wentz is still in the NFL, which was a shock to me when I found out he was backing up Patrick Mahomes. But Colts era Carson Wentz and Jameis Winston, It's not a glowing endorsement.
No, it's not. And when we come back, Adam, I have had some thoughts of, you know, what to do about it, because, you know, you kind of have this, well, let's see the upside. Let's see the riverboat gambler where you throw three touchdowns, right? Like we did at the very first game that he had. But with the way the Titans defense is playing, potentially, what's the best way to do this? Like, do you go the other way and just say, you know what, let's throw the ball like 14 times and just hand it off a bunch and take the game out of his hands a little bit more, if that's possible? Or does he have, can he even possibly do that?
615-737-1025, our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll get to that next. Tune into 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on Memphis. Pregame at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35, with coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9TheFan.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Bingen, Willie Donick, Derek Mason joining us just in time. Derek Mason is here. We'll get his thoughts on all of our thoughts.
Can we get a drum roll for D-Mace's entry into the show? Like, that's...
It's Derek Mason,
ladies and gentlemen, from Michigan State University.
Thank you, everybody.
Hey, thank you. I'll be at Zanies 2030 now.
if that career as a dentist doesn't work out, stand-up comic.
Is man of many talents. What was the first year you were going to be at Zanies?
I thought the first year was 2025. Which is this upcoming year, but then we pushed it back a little bit.
It keeps getting pushed back
because it's just like, I want to do one big show, and we're trying to figure out, you know, some renovations within Zanies to pack like a million people.
And then you became a dentist, too, so you had to push it back.
Yeah, so I had to push it back. I went to dental school, man. I had to push it back, you know. I have the DDS in my name.
We all know what it feels like to put your dreams on the back burner. So maybe one day you will be a stand-up comic. But Derek, before you came in, Willie and I were discussing some of the comparisons that have been made to Will Levis in the past few days. We talked about Jameis Winston yesterday. We played the clip from the Pat McAfee show. I believe it was on Monday. Pat McAfee comparing Will Levis to two sprains, Carson Wentz. Not the greatest company to keep, right, I feel like. Although I did make mention of your point about Jameis Winston yesterday, that Jameis Winston's going to get you the touchdowns. It's about managing everything else. But Willie was about to discuss ways that maybe Will Levis could be managed to mitigate some of the Winston-Wentz-isms that Will Levis might be showing.
And so we're going to, you know, Callahan's going to have his press conference coming up here during the next hour. We're going to talk to Jonathan Hutton. We'll hear what Callahan has to say. But I think we all know how bad that mistake was.
Yeah.
The question is, what is their plan with him? What's his plan to try to get back up off the canvas and do something? So do you think that it makes more sense to say, look, our defense played really well. Let's go into a little bit more of old school, run the ball, punt, be opportunistic, and let's try to win the game 17-10 just while he finds himself? Or do you go in with kind of the same thing that you've been working on all summer with him? I think it's a really interesting thing. Do you scale back a little bit and play more conservative? Because, A, he just got scarred,
yes,
right? His confidence could be down. And, B, you might have a defense that's good enough to win a very tight game.
Yeah, if you look at, let's just look at, say, the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years in the NFL in regards to quarterbacks. There are several, you know, methods that, you know, may work in regards to getting a quarterback, you know, easing them in. Some teams like to, you know, allow the quarterback to sit and wait. We saw that, you know, in several instances. You look at Jordan Love. Hell, you can even go back to Aaron Rodgers. He sat for 2 years. They wanted Justin Herbert to sit, but
was it Tyrod Taylor?
Yeah, ended up getting injured,
and so punctured the lung before
exactly.
The game.
So that forced him into playing. Joe Flacco, I go back to that. He wasn't set to be the starter, but because Troy Smith got very ill, they put him in. But they brought him along slowly. Look at Ben Roethlisberger. They brought him along slowly. So there are several different ways you can do this in regards to how do I maximize the most in my young quarterback without putting him in a position that he's going to fail. You see what's happening in Carolina. You don't want that to happen here.
It's a disaster.
Exactly.
In Carolina.
You see what almost happened in Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence. So there could be several ways to bring about your young quarterback. But in this situation, there's two problems with that. One, he's not young. And two, he's played enough games to me to understand you can't do some of these things that you did. Again, it's not the interception. Has nothing to do really with the interception. It has everything to do with we just discussed this in the third quarter. To not do anything that was going to put our offense at a disadvantage. The defense is playing great. They haven't sniffed a drop against our defense. Let's just not mess up the game. Well, if that's indeed the case, I put a lot of the blame on Brian Callahan too.
Well,
because run the football. If you are telling your quarterback in the third quarter, just don't do anything. Well, run the damn football.
And I wonder if presented with the same type of game on Sunday, will we see a
He's going to run the football. He's going to run it.
I thought it was very revealing that Brian Callahan used the word. He says, I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at the end of training camp, he felt better about Will Levis being able to manage those situations better.
But the last rounds are not going in preseason. That's what I don't understand when he says, well, I felt really comfortable. And I'm sorry, Willie, for cutting you off with that.
No, go.
For him saying, I was really comfortable with what he was doing and I felt he had it. You were not playing. I know you know, Seattle came in here and I know they gave you a little bit to sort of go back and, and digest and go over with your quarterback. But again, it didn't mean anything because regardless if you scored 80 touchdowns against them, it didn't mean anything. You know, to me, once you get into live games, when it really means something, that's when we need to decide whether he's the quarterback or not, or whether I'm surprised that he did something or not. The training camps and all that other stuff is just sort of like the pretest. And when we do pretest, a lot of times, I know I did well in pretest. There was no pressure. It was just like, okay. And then when the test came, the wording was different, and I'm like, oh, damn, now I really got to think. So he should have known. That was just a pretest. And in pretest, some people do well. But then when it's the real test, and if you miss three or four, that's going to determine whether you get an A or an F, then that means something. The pressure tends to ramp up a lot. You don't know how a person is going to react until they're in that situation. What we saw from Will Levis last year and what we have seen in his first game, again, I said it yesterday, I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but yet still I am recognizing the things that I'm seeing that haven't changed in a year and a half. He's 25 years old, and he's doing some of the same things that he did when he was in college.
If pre-SAT scores were – if you could qualify and send your pre-SAT scores for college applications, I would have been an Ivy Leaguer.
Really?
I don't believe that. But when I look at Adam and everything that he's done as far as journalism, no, he probably got like a 29 or 30 on the ACT.
See, I didn't take ACTs where I live. It was the SAT. But I did end up taking the actual SAT like two or three times because you can combine the scores and take your highest scores. But if pre-SATs counted as much as SATs, I would have maybe gone to a much better school. 615-737-1025. But I ended up here, so that's okay. 615-737-1025. We'll get Jonathan Hutton's thoughts on this and more coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.